Well, for years, she's been helping us make sense of Australian politics, making it more human, personal, fun, and understandable. Now, Annabelle Crabb is helping us appreciate Australian democracy and the uniqueness of the electoral system.
What do you think are the most remarkable elements of the Australian electoral system?
So what have we got? We've got compulsory voting, preferential voting,
the secret ballot, the democracy sausage,
the Australian Electoral Commission.
As an organisation, we aim to be not in the headlines.
The new series Civic Duty airs on the ABC next week. A look at the history of Australian democracy and how it functions today. What are the good and bad ingredients of the democracy sausage? And crucially, how that sausage is made. I caught up with Annabelle earlier in the week.
Annabelle Crabb, welcome back to Saturday Extra.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you.
You have described Australian democracy as exotic, improbable, a baffling combination of attributes. These are not words normally associated with a democratic system. So tell us what you've set out to do in your new series, Civic Duty.
Well, I'm just sort of popping open the hood of our democratic system, I suppose, because we have an independent electoral authority that makes sure that everybody's voting experience is the same, no matter whether you vote in Melbourne or in Yirrkala or in the High Commission in London. And it all looks the same and it's very unobtrusive. We kind of think of our voting system as normal and bland and unremarkable, but actually there is no other place in the world that does elections like we do. And the backstories about how we got some of the more unusual parts are really quite strange. So about a year ago, I said to the ABC, what about I make a documentary about electoral design, but make it interesting? And then someone was foolish enough to say, give it a go.
And you have made it interesting. You start with Alice in Wonderland and Lewis Carroll. What's Lewis Carroll got to do with Australian democracy?
Lewis Carroll, in his day job, was a mathematician called Charles Dodgson. And he used to invent all sorts of things in his spare time, including, I mean, he invented a machine for making notes in the darkness. He invented an early form of Scrabble. But he was very, very interested in mathematical systems that could make existing systems fairer. So he invented a way of making the Wimbledon tennis tournament fairer, which everybody ignored. And he also designed a system of preferential voting, which was also ignored. He tried to flog it to the British Parliament when the reform bill was coming up. Nobody wanted it. Too complicated. They do first past the post. And it sort of died with him. He died in the late 1800s. And then, weirdly enough, 20 years after his death, and using the work of another mathematician, an Australian one, Charles Nansen, Australia became the first country to adopt preferential voting, i.e. filling out all of the boxes on the ballot rather than just one, which is what the US and the UK and most democracies do. And so we became the torchbearers for this model of a more mathematically fair system where you hear a voter's opinion not just on one candidate, but on all of them. Or as Kevin Rudd tells us in this doco, you make a decision. Which of these schmucks do I hate the most? Which do I hate the second most? Which would I kind of live with? And which is the one that I really want?
That's a very good Kevin Rudd impersonation. But you look at Parliament House, Annabelle, and as a Brit, I see red and green leather benches,
mm-hmm.
right? And I
think, yep.
Well, that's Westminster.
It is, a bit.
And I hear the words House of Representatives
yes.
and the Senate, and I think, oh, that's Washington.
Yes.
And sometimes the system is called the Washminster model, right?
It is.
But what you've set out to do is to show, no, this is a quintessentially Australian model and a
yep.
quintessentially Australian system.
Yeah. So the reason we built Australia at Federation out of sort of the spare parts of our divorced parents in the UK and the US, we took the House of Reps and the idea of having a Prime Minister and all that from Britain, but we weren't going to really adopt the House of Lords, were we? I mean, completely ridiculous. And all of the smaller colonies before Federation were very nervous about the idea of coming together because they didn't want to hand over their power. And as an Adelaidean, I understand this, to Sydney and Melbourne, the biggest, most populous and most resource-rich states. And so the idea of having the Senate, where every state would have equal representation, And that would give them a manner of a way of ganging up and overpowering or resisting the bigger states. It was sort of what got Federation over the line. Now, the Senate doesn't exactly work like that, but it goes to show what drives a lot of these questions of design is usually powerful individuals who don't want to lose their power. And that's also, I mean, that's how we first got compulsory voting in Australia, because in 1912, Digby Denham, who was the Conservative Premier of Queensland, was at terrible war with the union movement. There were strikes everywhere, and they were very well organised, and they hated him. And so he thought, okay, how do I strike back against the get out the vote power of the unions? I know, I'll introduce compulsory voting. That way the moderate people have to vote. Now, it absolutely died a ditch for him because turnout was 90% and he lost his seat and half of his party and didn't return to power for a very long time. But it kind of caught on nationally, partly because the Labor Party then lost its fear of compulsory voting. So we've had compulsory voting for 100 years now.
Here's another democratic innovation that came from Australia, the secret ballot.
So the first election that was ever carried out in the Australian colonies with colonists voting was in 1843, and it was an election for advisors to the governor in Sydney and what was to be Victoria. Anyway, it was conducted on British rules, so only men with property could vote, and voting took place in public. So you did it with your voice, and you gathered in a public place, which in Australia was the pub, and the candidates made speeches and bought beers for everybody. It was called treating. And then the voters had to stand up and say who they were backing. So the candidates would know if their bribes had worked. And they also kept a running total of how the votes were going. So the losing candidates would have to rush out, fetch more people, get them liquored up and get them to vote. I mean, it was just an absolute debacle. There was a riot. A man was bludgeoned to death. It was ridiculous. But within 10 years, the Australian colonists had worked out that they weren't really that keen on this British system of voting in public. They didn't want their bosses or their neighbours or even their friends and family to know how they were voting. And so there was almost like a competition to invent a fairer way of voting. And it became the secret ballot, where you could sack someone in private. You voted on a piece of paper and popped it in without anyone reading over your shoulder.
And this became an idea that was exported. The Americans adopted it.
Right.
They called it the Australian ballot.
The Australian ballot. And it was adopted in Britain in 1872. And in 1888, Massachusetts became the first state in America to adopt it. And then Grover Cleveland was the first president elected using the Australian ballot. And it was, I mean, we were also the first place in the world to establish a permanent independent electoral authority, which is not something that did spread to America, very sadly, where over there the states are all responsible for running elections.
Well, you've mentioned a star of the show there.
Yes, I have.
Right off the bat, the Australian Electoral Commission.
Yes, exactly.
Who knew it would be this kind of great sort of, I mean, you've taken us behind the scenes. Your show, this sort of fabulously nerdy operation in many ways, but it's absolutely fascinating, partly because of its nerdiness.
Well, it is. And because they aim to be beige. I mean, Jeff Pope, who's the commissioner who's run this past election, said, I just want nobody to notice us. We don't ever want to be the story. And so quite obediently, we don't really notice them, right? Like, but it's unusual to have such consistency and independence. And that the only reason we have that is because there was this guy called William Boothby who was dragged to South Australia in 1853 with his dad, who'd been sent over to be a Supreme Court judge from London. His name was Benjamin Boothby. He brought his 12 children with him. And the joke was that he brought his own jury. And he was a nightmare. He had gout. He was cantankerous. He fought with everybody. He went rogue. He ended up having to be sacked by legislation. He was the last judge that the Colonial Office sent to Australia. But his eldest son, William, after whom the seat of Boothby in South Australia is now named, just happened to have this obsessive interest in electoral design. And it was 1850s, so half of Adelaide that was male and ambulant had gone to the gold rush to try and get rich. He had to run the first election in South Australia. He said, I don't really have a lot of resources. He decided, we will run it with bureaucrats that we will hire and pay. We will run elections at public expense, not charge voters, and we will count the vote independently of candidates, which was quite a radical idea at the time.
You've described the Australian Electoral Commission as trying to be beige, but it's worth pointing out it is the gold standard internationally.
They are the rock stars.
They really
are. So there's always a bit of a grudge match. It's actually worse than cricket, like between India and Australia, because India is the biggest and the toughest. I mean, like their elections take weeks and weeks.
Epic.
They use elephants. There's millions of campaign workers. But we like to think that ours is quite special. It's smaller, but wow, it makes a really big effort. And that idea that you can vote anywhere in Australia on polling day or before or anywhere around the world is quite revolutionary.
On ABC Radio National, it's Saturday Extra. I'm Nick Bryant and I'm talking to Annabelle Crabb about her new series on the ABC, Civic Duty. Annabelle, we've spoken about the design features that work really well, but there were design flaws. You speak of the fair go democracy in episode one, but there was also this terrible flaw, a kind of racist flaw, the denial of the franchised to First Nations people.
And this, I mean, there are existing and continuing problems with our democracy, the way there are in any democracy, I mean. But this was an instance where, again, individuals had a disproportionate role in a turn of history that was extremely damaging. The Franchise Act, original Franchise Act, the first Barton government brought to Parliament in 1902, was incredibly simple. And it would, if it had passed in that simple state, have been the most open and franchised electoral act in the world. And it was changed because of a truculent individual that started a debate, right? Like, so the original legislation was if you were over 21 and you lived in Australia and you were a British subject, because Australian citizenship wasn't then a thing, then you could vote. No gender barrier, no property requirement, really quite radical for that time, certainly in advance of the US and the UK. There was a senator from Western Australia called Alexander Matheson, and he said, I don't feel good about the fact that my wife and daughters are getting the right to vote today, but it's shared with Aboriginal women. He took a real objection to that, that Aboriginal people would be able to vote. And he went on and on and on about it and moved an amendment. And then started saying, well, in Perth, where I'm from, there's lots of Aboriginal people who will be captured by wealthy graziers and will be swamped by Aboriginal votes. And to their credit, the government of the day fought against this, removed the amendment that went down to the lower house and got put back in. And in the end, it had gathered support to the extent that he felt he couldn't win the legislation without that amendment. And so it went through. And so until 1962, so 60 years, the Franchise Act barred the enrolment of Aboriginal voters. Now, some, a handful, could vote because they'd been enfranchised at the state level before. But what an extraordinary thing that for half of the life of this federation, we actively excluded the continent's first people. The damage that was done by the exclusion of Aboriginal people for the first 60 years is still ongoing, because voter turnout in Aboriginal communities and Linjari, which has the highest proportion of Aboriginal voters, is the lowest turnout in Australia. It's communities that are remote that don't have AEC booths open for weeks and weeks. There are long-term damages from that omission that it is impossible to ignore.
We're talking on the eve of the 50th anniversary of the dismissal crisis, talking about flaws in democracy, the ability of a governor general to sack a prime minister, which is still available.
Yes, it is.
To this day.
Yep.
What does that tell us about the robustness of Australian democracy?
It tells us that a lot of our process is a handshake deal. It's a convention, a matter of convention.
Norms, I mean, rather than rules.
Right. And if you think about the writers of the Constitution, you know, they were dealing with late 1800s problems. Like, how do we get these smaller colonies over the line? How do we massage the power bases of all these people so that we can form a federation? And there are bits that the Constitution kind of skipped over. I mean, it doesn't even mention the Prime Minister, for instance. And it certainly didn't mention political parties, which have gone on to become a huge power base in this country. So the idea that people would behave conventionally and in the way that the British Parliament or executive behaved underwrites a lot of the text of our Constitution. So when you make a fence, sometimes you can't see the gaps, right? Mm. You can't anticipate how people might exploit opportunities later on. I mean, and this is why we have the court system, right? To kind of make a judgment about how to interpret written laws where there's bits that, you know, questions arise that weren't intended. And I think that 50 years ago, the decision of the Governor General to behave as he did was just an extraordinary breach of convention that hadn't been anticipated, right? And could happen again today, you're right.
Annabel, the central argument of Donald Thorne's lucky country was that Australia was derivative. It was imitative. It just took the British system and just didn't have to think too much about creating an Australian system. Your documentary demolishes that idea.
Yeah, I don't think that's right. I mean,
I don't think it's right either.
If we had, then why did we? I mean, we were a different society, okay? We did a lot of independent thinking. I mean, we did away with vocal voting. We invented the secret ballot and booths and administering an electoral system independently. And we built this parliament through spare parts. I mean, it's quite different. And the texture of our democracy is different too.
The democracy sausage is a uniquely Australian serving.
We interviewed the British Electoral Commissioner. He said, look, respect your electoral system. It's respected around the world, but the democracy sausage, you'd be arrested for that in the UK.
Annabel Crabb, it is a fantastic series. Thanks so much for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Thank you.
And Civic Duty screens from 8:30pm on Monday the 10th of November on ABC TV, with all three episodes available to binge on ABC iView.
ABC RN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.